Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen.
And we welcome you to
Love Letters Live. And this is a show about love letters in the seemingly endless form they take. We've been doing this show now for almost 2 years. And it's always amazes both me and Teresa the love letters that people come in with that you hadn't necessarily thought about. We've got another wonderful one today.
Let's go ahead.
Perfect. Let's just go right to our guest. And I'd like to introduce Janice Brenner. And I know Janice Brenner is going to talk about a part of her life with her mother that is so worth hearing. So, Janice, I would just want to go to you and ask you to talk about your mother and how you defined yourself as her daughter.
Thank you very much. My beloved late mom, Pauline Reimer, who passed away in December of 2004, had pancreatic cancer, and actually for the last 4 years of her life, I was her primary caregiver, and she resided in Israel.
Oh, I was going to ask you that, yes.
Right. And she and I had always been very, very close. So for me, this was a great privilege. It was unexpected. Well, of course, one doesn't anticipate somebody getting ill. And the day after my beloved father passed away, my mom took ill.
Oh.
It took us a long time to understand what the problem was. And hers was a very rare form of pancreatic cancer.
That's so sad.
And she had always been a very positive person. And there were so many lessons to be learned from my mom in the way she handled her illness.
Well, let me ask you something before you talk about that part of her life.
Right.
We can hear you're from South Africa.
Yes, absolutely.
And you live in San Francisco. And can you talk for just a couple of minutes about your family's journey? Like, how did you come from South Africa to
San
Francisco, and why is she in Israel? And
right, certainly. And it's a very good point, I think, for anybody, because when we have lost somebody, it's sometimes difficult to remember the healthy times and to think back, because everything is so concentrated during those, you know, last months and even years in my mom's case. So my parents were from South Africa, and I have a sister and a brother. I'm the baby by a long shot. And we grew up in South Africa. My beloved late mom was actually a musician.
Oh.
And she played the piano. And she also, when my sister and brother were, my sister was a teacher and my brother was becoming an oral surgeon, and I was at high school, and my parents decided to take themselves back to university. My dad was a chemical engineer, and he decided to go and do psychology, and my mom did too. And then he went on and did forensic science. So they were very interesting. They had been married for 56 and a half mm-hmm. years when my mom passed away. And they knew each other from when he was 12 and she was 8.
And in South Africa.
In South Africa, yes. Mm-hmm. And then my parents went to live in Israel in 1989.
Oh.
And my father in particular was a staunch Zionist.
Mm-hmm.
And his dream was always to live in Israel. And only after my parents... I had come to the United States in 86, pardon me, and my sister and brother had also come to the States before that. And so that was our, you know, trajectory.
Yeah, so that's how you ended up in different countries. And so you made a whole life here in San Francisco, and then your mother took ill, and you gave it up, it sounds like. You moved back to it, or you moved to Israel to be with her.
I did. What happened was I was in Israel for my dad's, when my dad passed away. And I then happened to be at a conference in Israel. And my mom, as I say, took ill the next day. And then one thing led to another. And in the years I was in Israel, she was hospitalized over 45 times.
Mm.
And you would never have known she had a single problem. She was so gracious, and she really was very accepting, and she was a very happy person.
How did she behave? I mean, how did she show that acceptance? And you say you wouldn't know that she was sick.
There was no sense of anger. There was, when I said to her, "Mommy, aren't you angry that you got cancer?" She said, why should I be angry, darling? She said, you know, everything lives and dies. And she loved nature. She loved flowers. And she said, just as flowers perish, human beings have to pass on too. And she said, if I wouldn't have got cancer, I would have got something else. I said, but mommy, I don't want you to go. And she said, well, of course not, but it would be very boring if we just recycled the same people all the time. So it was a very, it was a journey that was the greatest privilege in my life.
To take care of her.
Absolutely.
So you stayed with her in her home?
I stayed with her in her home. Yes, I did, for the most part.
What a wonderful gift that is to you, really, when you think about it, to have an example of passing on in that manner.
No question
without
about...
Without anger, without panic, without fear, and with still love in your heart for those around you.
No question about that. I think in the 4 years, there was only one moment, really, where my mom expressed fear.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one point when she was in the hospital. And other than that, people just gravitated towards her as bees go to honey, mm-hmm. because she was so... generous-hearted, and I think that the way that she handled the rest of her life was just how she handled being ill. There was no difference. It was a continuum, and the doctors fell in love with her. I mean, she, the nurses were just like angels to her, she yeah. said, and I think that when you have the spirit of acceptance and love and a real inner peace. Because my mom would not have said she was a religious person.
I was going to ask you, was she? Mm. Yes.
And I think that she was in not in formulaic ways. Not she was in terms of the way that she responded and reacted. I think that there was deep faith.
Yes.
She wouldn't have described it that way.
Yeah. You find that with a lot of people who say I'm not religious, as if they're almost embarrassed.
Right.
And then every step they take is so.
Right.
Spiritually guided somehow from, yes. Well, yes, I'm kind of stammering, but what a wonderful, wonderful person she must have been. And she still is in your heart, I can see in your face.
Absolutely.
This is one of those television moments,
right.
I wish.
And actually, the thing is that I wanted to be able to give her, obviously, a different kind of love. As you said, with love letters, there are so many different levels of love. And I wanted to be able, in some small measure, to give her the love my dad would have had he been alive.
Oh, my.
So that was why I wanted her to not have to worry about anything.
So how did you take care of those things that she wouldn't have to worry? What kind of things should we be looking at?
You know, any of the financial issues or any of the practical issues, I wanted so much for her to be able to enjoy every last moment of her life. She loved music.
Without the daily
worries.
So you took that off her shoulders.
Absolutely. Entirely. She loved being in the garden. So I used to garden for her, which I had never done. She always had a green thumb.
Mm-hmm.
And to try to also fill her life with the people who were so important to her. And in fact, she had chemotherapy 6 months prior to passing away, and that really gave her that added 6 months. And my sister came to Israel, and we threw a party for my mom for her 80th birthday. Unfortunately, my brother couldn't be there. And my mom had 120 of her friends at her 80th birthday.
120 of her best friends.
Yeah. Well, my sister said, I haven't had so many friends my whole life,
yeah.
And there's mommy at 80.
And I have a question. Were they coming as if it's hello, or were they coming as if it were goodbye? Or
you
neither?
Know, they were coming as if it was goodbye. And it
was she
was,
aware of that?
Oh, absolutely. My she was initially she didn't want a party at all, and she wasn't somebody who liked the limelight.
Mm.
And we insisted, And I even chose songs. We divided it. My sister's very organized and good with, she's a party planner, so she did all the events. She did the food and taking care of the guest list, etc. And I was the one who was in charge of the creative program. And I met with a musician and actually got songs that my mom and dad used to love. And because I didn't know all the songs, I made her sing some of the refrains to me because I wanted to be sure that everything was just so. And in fact, they ended the program with The Impossible Dream. And everybody was crying.
Oh,
yeah. And my mom, who was such a gracious lady, as are you, Janet, she always looked impeccable. And when she had lost her hair, and we were so sure she'd want to wear a wig, not a chance. She had no problem going out like that. And interestingly enough, many of her friends were very worried about that. They had a much harder time seeing her without hair than she did. It was very interesting.
She had accepted the fact that she was ill and other people were not so...
I think other people... I don't know if it was that they didn't accept it, but perhaps...
They hadn't seen it that close up?
I think it becomes too close for comfort. Yes, it does. It's very unnerving. And my mom also, she had a very distended belly at different times of the illness. And in fact, the social worker at the wonderful place where she lived called Protea Village in Israel suggested that I take my mom to a maternity shop.
How clever.
And of course, for her, it was always so important to look lovely. It was just a part of her being. And to give you an idea of how courageous she was, when we went to the maternity store, she said, "Oh, I'm expecting twins. Don't you think that's wonderful?" And, you know, it was so disarming because here I wheeled her in a wheelchair without any hair and, you know, distended belly. And you look at her and you think, oh, my goodness, how am I going to handle this? And yet she was just, you know, spunky.
Made it easy.
Oh, yeah. Made it very easy.
So everybody made this, her last days, easy for each other.
Yes. Well, I think very much so, though.
As easy as could be. You know,
yes, though I think actually that the thrust was really on making it easy for her.
But she took her part to it.
Oh,
like.
She absolutely did. No question about that. And I have to tell you that she was extremely resilient, because had it been my late dad, forget about it.
Oh, really?
I mean, in the sense that the one doctor said to me, you know, your mom is not a package, because if I could have shipped her off to the moon, taken her, turned the world on its axis, if I could have done anything, I would have, to make her well, to do anything, to change anything. I was on a mission.
Do you look like her?
Very much.
Oh, because, you know, I'm looking at you again. You're just so beautiful. I'm not going to spend time describing what you look like to our listeners, but... it's so clear just watching you that somehow she is still alive in you.
It's interesting when people say that it's not something that I experience. I think what is most important for me is the way that I conduct myself and the life that I lead. I think that is the way in which I want my mom's memory to be a blessing. And she was more reserved than I am and very ladylike. She used to say to me, "I don't know where you came from." And
thank goodness you do.
And also, the one thing that really helped was to be perfectly honest with my mom about what she was going through. I had asked her doctors whether I should actually tell her the truth, and they said unequivocally, because especially if you have enjoyed such a close relationship, it becomes very divisive if you start to tell untruths. And
I'm sure that's crazy making for another person to feel like you're not part of your own life, even if it's the end of your own life.
Right. I think, and also what the one doctor, Professor Baum, explained to me, who he's a legend. He said that your mom, just as all patients who are dying know, you know when you are going to die. And by people telling you, you know, you're going to be okay, it doesn't make it any better.
No.
And he said then, especially, you know, with cancer. He said, what is the big C word? So every time you have to speak to a doctor, and he said, increasingly that's going to be the case. What are you going to do? Whisper? Go out of the room? I said, but what happens if I'm going to cry? He said, have you never cried in front of your mother? Why should now be any different?
Yes.
And in fact, he suggested that I get books by Rachel Naomi Remen, the most wonderful books that I highly recommend to anybody who is taking care of a loved one with a terminal illness.
Okay.
It's an anthology of stories. And actually, Dr. Remen lives locally. She's a physician who actually is world famous.
What's
and
her first name?
Rachel Naomi Remen.
Can you spell the last name for our listeners?
Certainly. It's R-E-M like in mother, E. N as in Nancy.
Okay.
And Dr. Remen herself has Crohn's disease, so, and is a physician, and so developed a tremendous sensitivity and sensibility for people who are not well. So she's a doctor and is on the other side as well.
Oh, thank you for telling us that.
Yeah. Oh, just remind our listeners that this you're listening to Love Letters Live. We're here every week at this time talking to wonderful guests who have stories to tell and letters to share.
Well, this is the point at which I will ask you, who gets your love letter today and why?
Well, my love letter today goes to the unsung heroes and heroines who took care of my mom, primarily in the last few months of her life. The one incredible human being was Judith, who came to my mom's apartment. And
was she a hospice nurse?
She was not a hospice nurse. It wasn't yet time for hospice. And she was such a generous-hearted, wise human being.
Mm-hmm.
And she was so effusive and warm and allowed my mom to relax and just be herself. And I will explain what Judith had in common with them, that the hospice where my mom was, which is part of the Shoam Geriatric Medical Center in Israel, there was Dr. Nelly Francis, who was the one physician, and Dorit Moskowitz, and the team of nurses.
Now, I understand that you mentioned that you had written thank yous.
I had.
Now, have you written a letter to this person in particular yet?
Individually? Not individually. What I did was, after my mom had passed away, I actually went back to the hospice.
Oh.
It's about 36 miles from where my mom lived.
Uh-huh.
And I took a feast for the for the nursing, for all the staff.
So
and
that was your personal thank you.
Right. And I wrote a letter to them. And actually, they were in tears because they explained that, tragically, many times family members direct their anger and sense of loss and grief at the hospice nurses.
Okay, so we want to say, I mean, Teresa, you're just shaking your head in disbelief, and you would think, from where we sit, so the opposite would be true. And it just shows the importance, I want everyone to hear who was listening, of writing a love letter, a thank you letter as a love letter. Because healthcare people very often say we don't hear from people very often. We don't hear a thank you, and we don't hear how much we meant. It's such a gift. And even later, even years later, if you write a letter to someone, as you were going to do, this letter out of the blue that reiterates what you feel and your gratitude, even years later, she'll have this forever. It will make a difference in her life, and of course it'll make a difference in yours, just the joy of reliving the thanks you feel.
So it's never too late, I think is what you're saying.
Oh, thank you. You always say things much more tersely than I do. So why don't you talk about what you're going to include in this letter? What things are you going to tell her? And you have her address, obviously. So you can
yes, I do. Okay. And actually, it's a number of people. It's not just one person. It's the team of hospice
nurses.
But
are you going to address it to her?
I'm going to address it to the team of hospice nurses and Dr. Nelly Francis at the.
But what about the Yehudit?
And Yehudit. Well, actually, Yehudit, I already wrote a letter to.
Okay.
And actually, I did already write a letter.
So what is it you want to say most of all in this letter?
That I, it's very hard to even put into words the extent of my gratitude.
Okay, well, that's an important point, because that's the joy of really sitting down to write a love letter. You can work on it, you can reread it and see if you've got it all in there, and if you don't, you can add to it. And I see that you've got really extensive notes, so you go ahead.
So it's with heartfelt and such deep thanks that I am honored to have this opportunity to give public expression and recognition and acknowledgement to each and every one of you. Many of you are really unsung heroes, and individually and collectively, you were a font of support, encouragement, love, and deep caring. And without you, I really know that neither my mom nor I would have gotten through this time, and certainly not in such a peaceful, loving way.
So I have a question here. It sounds very much like these people, you know, we talk so much about helping people live in peace and live well. And this sounds like a team who allowed her to die in peace, to pass on in peace. I would think that's an important...
Unquestionably so, and I tell you that...
Are you saying that? I mean, that would be an important thing.
I definitely am. I said that if anyone would have told me that I would be able to feel a sense of deep inner peace and appreciate how blessed I was on the day my mom died, I would have found it totally incomprehensible. And the reason... What I also want to say is their respect and sensitivity and compassion and loving kindness was not only directed at my mom, it was also directed at me.
In what way?
They gave me space to come to terms with the reality. When I went to the hospice where my mom was for 2 weeks, I got my mom's friend to pack me clothes as if I was going for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the greatest challenge, which is what hospice nurses do, is to help you make the switch from active care to palliative care. And hospice palliative care is where the whole focus is on relieving suffering. And it's no longer on trying to be curative. And that is so different when all the time we are taught with the advances in modern medicine that there is almost nothing that medicine can't, you know, change and remedy. Mm-hmm. And as I remember once, a doctor said to me, you know, death is not optional. And, mm-hmm. and the thing is that for me, the tempo in a hospice, the tenor is so tranquil. It was eerie in the beginning
now
for
you
me.
You say all this, right?
Yes, I do. In fact,
because these are the kind of specifics that make a good love letter a great love letter.
Right, absolutely. The one thing what I wanted to say is how when my mom was first admitted, I very very quickly felt that something was very wrong, and I became terribly uncomfortable. As I say, the tempo was too serene. It was almost otherworldly, and nothing was happening. And I felt as if you were all neglecting my mom. I couldn't face her. I, after typically being only, you know, an arm's length away from her, I could not even look her in the eye. I couldn't enter her room the first day when I was there, and I had a nagging feeling that I'd brought her to a terrible place that was no good, and I felt I was letting her down, that I was betraying her trust. And actually, I was like a caged animal. I was pacing up and down, and I was agitated. I wanted to escape with her, and I wanted to take her somewhere where the doctors would take care of her. And I didn't understand that it wasn't them, it was the illness that was killing her. It was not the nurses. They were just angels. And that process, you know, Dorit Moskowitz, the one nurse, a few days before my mom passed away. Well, actually, let's back up for a moment, because something humorous, I wanted to thank them and remind them, and I know they will remember, that when they used to bring my mom her wheelchair, she'd say, oh, here comes my Ferrari. And then when they used to change my mom's diaper, which for many patients is a period of such humiliation. No, my mom, she said, 1, 2, 3, come and change me. Uh-huh. So you can imagine they wanted to be around my mom. And the one angel, as my mom called all her nurses, actually gave my mom a manicure a few days before she died to pamper her. And we used to fill her room with flowers, then at night take them out. And people walked into her room and said, it looks like there's a celebration here. Mm-hmm. And so and Dorette Moskowitz, a few days before my mom passed away, she said to me, you know, in such a loving and encouraging way, and I want to forever thank you for that, Dorette. As unconscionable as what you were saying to me was at the time, you said, you know, you have to ask your mom for her, you have to give your mom your permission for her to go.
Yes.
What kind of a request is that?
Oh, perfectly sane, reasonable request. You want your children somehow be okay. And
I was incredulous. And in fact, you know, the minute I'd finished speaking to Dorette, now, of course, I went into my mom's room and I said, Mommy, you won't believe what Dorette asked me to do. And I said, I can't do that. And then the next day, I had the miraculous privilege of being with my mom and Dr. Nelly and another couple of nurses. When my mom, she was perfectly lucid, she put out her hands and she begged me. She said, please, I need you to let me go.
And tell me you're going to be okay without me, that you can continue.
Right, and I'm ready to go, she said. And I clapped my hands. I said, no, I have a question for you. And she said, what is that? And I said, I want to know if you know how much I love you. And she said a resounding yes. And then I actually got my sister on the phone and my brother was on his way coming in. And it was just, and when I asked Dr. Nelly, Dr. Nelly said, you haven't slept for a few, you know, for nights. You must go to sleep now, Janice, because she said, your mom is going to pass any time. And I said to her, well, I have to be there when she dies. She says, well, you know, we can't guarantee. Right. I can have gone to the restroom, she said, but I promise you, I will go into your mom's room every 5 minutes. What kind of a thing is that for a doctor?
Yes.
And she said, and I will wake you.
Yes.
And she did.
Well, my goodness. So you said a lot of things here, just looking at me, that I don't know if it's in your notes, every one of those things, but so many of those things are so perfectly beautiful and appropriate to say in a thank you. Will you remember them, all these details?
Oh, definitely. Okay. And I do have them written down.
Okay, perfect.
So
I just wanted to make sure, because every one of those points is something they should read.
It was, well, I think, to thank you all for taking me on a journey towards acceptance.
Thank you for being here and just telling us this story. And
how important to say thank you to these people who don't make a lot of money.
Oh, that is for sure. That's an understatement.
Right. So they do it because of the kind of people that they are. And so something like this is worth $1 million.
And they're dealing with people who are so terribly vulnerable.
Yes.
And they do it with such unconditional love.
Both the dying
love.
And the family of the dying are terribly vulnerable. But how beautiful that, giving permission to go.
Right.
Oh, thank you so much. What more to say?
I know it's hard to talk after this.
Right. But I was expecting to be in tears with this interview.
Me too.
Janet. And we're
you
not.
Feel strengthened, don't you?
No, we do feel strengthened. Uh-huh. And dying is part of life, and how beautiful to have it end this way.
And to know that there's a possibility for it to end this way.
Right.
Absolutely.
That's what's important, is knowing the potential.
Right. So just time to remind our listeners that we're here every week at this time. We hope you'll join us. And if you have a story to tell or a letter to share, please let us know. Please go to our website at loveletterslive.com. Click past programs if you've missed some of our past shows and listen to them. And send us a letter of your own.
And if you have anything to say to Janice or any questions, you can send it to us and we'll be happy to forward it.
Right.
And this is just a wonderful time to say, as we always do when we end, that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing that love letter is the special occasion.
Okay.
For you and for the person who's going to receive it.
So we just urge you to put those love letters into writing while you still have the chance.
Yes.
So from Teresa
and Janet,
till next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.